Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.
Good afternoon, I'm Joe Beamer. Mark is taking some personal time off, but we expect him back soon. In the meantime, I am very happy to be here with you on this Thursday. It is 4:05, and the president, just a few minutes ago, announced the reestablishment of the presidential fit test. Let's hear clip 35, and then I want to see what everyone remembers from the presidential fit test. So clip 35.
The order directs the council to develop strategies to improve America's physical fitness and renew the American spirit, excellence, competitiveness, and sportsmanship. To that end, I'm pleased to announce that we're officially restoring the presidential fitness test and the presidential fitness award, and it's going to be a very big thing. From the late 1950s until the 2013, graduate scholars all across our country competed against each other in the presidential fitness test, and it was a big deal. This was a wonderful tradition, and we're bringing it back.
All right, so we're bringing it back. We've got Sue, we've got Fred, we've got Ethan in the studio. All right, Sue, what do you remember from the presidential fitness test?
I remember it being a big deal, and the one where you had to climb the rope, right? They would just like drop that in the gym and say, all right, we're all going to climb this. And, you know, you're just a little kid with the scrawny arms, and I never made it up. But the rest of the events were really kind of fun.
Yeah, the sit-ups, the pull-ups.
Right.
I remember having to run a mile, but I'm being told that's not part of the fitness test.
I didn't have to do that. Ethan, did you have to do that?
Well, unless I'm thinking of a different fitness test in high school, I want to say we did have to run a mile, yeah.
Did you do that, Fred?
Oh, yeah, we had to run around the school block like 8 times to do a mile.
Oh, my gosh,
yeah,
that is hilarious.
Did you guys have to do the pacer test?
What's that?
I don't remember that.
No one? Joe?
No, what's the pacer test?
The pacer test is basically, I mean, from one side of the gym to the other, the short way, the width.
Yeah.
There's like a little beep that plays, and at first it's every 20 seconds, and you have to make it to the other side of the court before that beep. And then the longer you go, the shorter the time between those beeps, and it's meant to, you know, like I said, test your pacing ability.
I gotcha.
No, never did that.
You never did that?
No.
Uh-uh. Interesting.
Huh. We did 17s for lacrosse practice because, you know, the first month of lacrosse season was indoors here in Buffalo because it's still snowing. And 17s were all in your lacrosse equipment. And you know how hot a gym can get even in the winter with the heat going. So we'd have to run 17 times the width, like Ethan said, back and forth. And if the coach saw someone with their mouth guard out, if both hands weren't on your lacrosse stick, you'd have to start 17. Not just you. The whole team would have to do 17 again, except for the person who got caught. They would sit in the middle of the gym, and we'd all have to stare at them as we're running.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, why did they get rid of this to begin with? Not that weird thing, but, I mean, presidential stuff to begin with. Why is it gone?
Yeah, I
don't know.
Like I said, I didn't even know it was gone. But I just assumed that everyone was still putting their foot in the little box and seeing how far they can get the the thing to go. Remember that?
I don't remember that at all. It's hilarious to me that there sound like there were different versions of this test throughout time and the U.S.
Yeah, the sit and reach. You would sit, you would put your foot extended, and then you would see how far can you stretch. Like your foot would be on the one end of the box, and then you would try to see if you could get the metal thing all the way to the end, and it would, like, you know, measure your stretching ability.
Nope, don't remember that one. When is it coming back? Did he just say that today, so now it's instituted like next year?
I guess as soon as they can get up to speed, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we still have a month and a half till we're back in school here, so I'm hoping by mid-September they can have the kids doing this. I like you said, Sue, I remember it was a big deal. The gym was all dressed up, and you would be in groups. One group would go run the mile while the other group's doing the sit and reach, while one group's doing the rope.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would cycle around. It would take like 3 gym classes to get the whole test in.
Oh, that's so funny.
You know, President Trump at his news conference just last hour had all the members of his presidential fitness council there. And a lot of them got up and did their talks about it, and including RFK Jr.
Love it.
Talked about it. Triple H, the wrestler, was there. If you want to play any of that sound, we've got some of that sound.
Can I just, you know, now I was at WrestleMania 2018 when Triple H and Stephanie took on Ronda Rousey, okay? But I mean, Triple H, he's in great shape. A little bit of that was assisted. Can we just say we don't want kids doing everything Triple H did?
Well, yes, I think we can.
Let's play Triple H. He's clip 36. This was at the announcement.
For me, since I was 14, this has been such an important part of my life. Health, fitness, sports, nutrition, all of it. I think learning that at a young age sets you up for success in life. And without it, you're at a lesser place for it. So I look forward to the opportunity to do this. I look forward to the opportunity to help make our youth healthy, help get them engaged in sports, and let them learn what it takes to be successful in life. So thank you very much for the honor.
Thank you very much.
Okay, go ahead.
Go on, Sue.
I was going to say, I just looked this up, you know, to say, what is it that you have to do for it? And it's the curl-ups, pull-ups, push-ups, shuttle run, one-mile run, or walk, and sit and reach. But they have a picture of the patch that used to come out. It's the Presidential Physical Fitness Award. And I remember people would take this thing, that's how old I am, and sew it onto like their jacket if you won this thing. Oh, yeah. It was
right
a
under
patch.
Yes. Right under your letter?
Right, or not. I mean, if you're just a person who happened to be the 85th percentile or whatever it takes to be that, you would get a patch. Yeah, if you were a really good sit and reacher, you could get one too and not play football or whatever.
All right, before we get out of here, what was everyone's best mile time? Be honest.
Oh, I have no idea.
Olympic best is 4, so I was probably at 16.
I ran track in high school. Mine was 5:52.
Wow.
That's pretty good. That's really good.
Or middle school, not high school, middle school.
When I was in my best shape, I was running a 7:15 mile. Now, it should be noted that I wasn't in my best shape until I was in my mid-20s. But still.
That still counts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now I'm running 8.5, but that was after losing 50 pounds last year. So,
all right.
I applaud this. You know, the country's going in one direction, and we gotta start with the kids, guys. We gotta start with the kids, getting them back in shape and starting them off right. When we come back, Sue's News here on 97.1 FM Talk.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No, 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 no.
And now Sue's News, brought to you by Sue.
On this day in history, 97 years ago. Now, I just find this interesting. See if you do, too. It was in 1928 when the MGM Lion roared for the very first time at the beginning of the studio's first talking movie. The talking movie is 97 years old. Now, the name of the movie was White Shadows in the South Seas, and there was only one word of dialogue in the entire film. How is that a talkie? Okay, but
captivating.
Here, that word was hello. That was it.
Wow.
We've come a long way, Sue. We've come a long way.
I mean, if you think, ooh, I'm paying for a talkie. This is exciting. Then you watch the whole thing, and there's only one word, and it's hello.
I'd like to be the screenwriter for that one.
Right. Right.
I'd like my money back.
That is just nuts to me. Okay, and 54 years ago, but this has some music, Ethan. 54 years ago, in 1971, this song went to number one.
When you're down and troubled, and you need
now, of course, this is James Taylor's version, but it's a Carole King who wrote it. You've Got a Friend, hit number one. I took sign language, a one sign language class in college, and the final was you had to learn sign language to a song. So we all tried to find the slowest songs known to man. And this is what I did. So I can sign, well, I don't think I could remember it anymore, but you've got a friend, and I learned it from Sue Kretschel, who had it the semester before, and she taught me how to do it. But this is what I think of every time I hear this song. It's just awesome. 54 years ago today. It was old when I did it.
If you'd have chosen the Star Spangled Banner, just think,
you
could still
imagine
be performing
Fred
before sporting events.
And you know
events.
That song? Like, it's just funny to listen it, to watch people try to do that. That song that's like, somewhere. I mean, it was hilarious. It was a race to see who could do the slowest stuff. Although one guy did a Morrissey song. So hats off to Sam.
Well, those are slow and sad.
Well, yeah, but you had to come up with stuff like Armageddon, you know, so he was learning stuff for it.
Heavens knows I'm miserable now.
Exactly.
Right.
That, exactly right. All right, chowhound.com has a new list of, this is so disgusting, of canned foods that were popular 50 years ago but nobody eats anymore. It's a trip down memory lane, but it's also so disgusting. Okay, I will start with this. Canned mac and cheese.
Ooh.
Did you know that existed?
No idea.
Chef Boyardee had one.
Gross.
Okay. SpaghettiOs, do you know that's a thing, Ethan? I think it still is.
Well, I remember that.
Very popular.
Hunt's pudding snack packs. These things did not taste right, Fred.
I agree.
Okay, they tasted weird. You probably never had one,
mm-hmm.
Ethan.
I did not.
Did you, Joe?
No, I wouldn't want the people making my ketchup also making my pudding.
Yeah, let me tell you something. That's fine. Number four is a canned whole chicken.
Ugh.
What?
Huh.
God. Apparently Sweet Sue had that. That's still a brand of, I want to say, like chicken broth, but they stuffed a whole chicken in there? Canned whole chicken, people.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
They're still doing that somewhere.
What?
I watched a video of someone who taste tested it and said it was awful, but they pulled a full chicken out of a can.
Okay.
That's a big can.
Why? It is a big can. Do they, I assume it's not whole, right? They just pull off a leg and stuff it in there and a... I don't get that at all.
I think that's, it was like the pieces just came out with the liquid and everything.
Canned brown bread. They do that in the Northeast. What? Why would you just buy it in the store like a person in its slices and put it in the toaster? Deviled ham, which I always found to be disgusting, but I'm not a ham person. It's ground up ham, spiced, and packed into a can. And Old El Paso at one point sold canned tortillas. They were made with, just so soggy and disgusting sounding. They were made with corn, water, and salt, but you let the store tortillas, that's how you would store it, and it would be in a can, and when you needed one, you just pop that open and pop out a tortilla. That is so disgusting. And finally, canned ribs. The brand Armor had one.
Mm.
They were especially cut to work with the can. Then they smoked and with hickory chips for, quote, great flavor. Huh? Uh-huh. It's disgusting.
We used to have canned tamales.
Yeah, I think that's a thing, too. Are they still exist?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not a tamale person.
I'm not a canned person.
I'm not either.
I try to avoid the canned things.
Yes, you should. There is an Irish comedian out, Joe, who has done this. His name is David O'Doherty, and I think he does the best bit on dealing with his parents who are trying to deal with technology. It's so fun. I've made Fred and Ethan watch it, and then I thought, why am I not just putting this on the air? I think Joe might get a kick out of it. I've watched it like 20 times. Okay, listen to this. See if you enjoy it.
Mom and Dad, I'm so lucky. Still have you around.
Did you take out the F?
And I want to know every lesson you've picked up along life's way. But whenever I'm about to ask, you say, how do I print a Google? What channel is Netflix on? What's the password to the family? What is app?
Okay, two things there now, Matt. There's no password. And secondly, you always call it What Is App. You know, it's WhatsApp. Yes, but David, it should be What Is App. Because it's What's and there's no apostrophe. I know, Mum. I'm sorry. David, what's a meme? Oh, for f***ing sake. Where is the cloud? I don't know. Should we get TikToks? Nope. David, I think I'm stuck on the dark web. What? Show me your computer. See that? You've just turned your color balance down. That's not the dark web. The dark web's something else. David, you think we're idiots. Well, we were able to sort it out this morning. Your father got an email from the bank. Get this, there was a fire and they'd lost all of our personal details. No! Just don't give them the three numbers on the back of the car. They'd lost the three numbers. Ah! David, remember I said my computer is running slow and you told me to close all the windows? It's very warm in the house. I'm coming straight over, Mom.
I just love that. And I've done so much of that. My parents are both gone, but my mother used to call me about the blue button on her computer that didn't exist. So I thought, what? But he is brilliant. And somehow the fact that he puts it to music makes it that much better.
Oh, it sure does. And for my parents and for my in-laws, if anything's wrong with the cable, with Alexa, with the phones, I get called over. Nothing can be told over the phone. I literally have to get in the car and drive over and show everything. Like my parents today, they said, hey, I can't get the station on the TV anymore. It's like, yeah, you got to do this. And every time, I'm dropping my son off to come to work and I have to download a new app or uninstall an app on their TV. It's nonstop.
It's just how it is. It's just how it is. Okay, I was in Deerbergs yesterday and I already saw Halloween stuff for sale. Has anybody else seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I got you beat.
What?
I saw Christmas stuff at Hobby Lobby.
What?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
They skip Halloween. They skip Thanksgiving. And
Halloween is there.
Oh,
Halloween
okay.
is there. Thanksgiving's there. And there is a wall of Christmas decorations, wreaths, just in case you're ready to decorate the house today.
You know, I actually thought when I saw the Halloween stuff, I went into like a time warp and I thought, wait a minute. Oh, they're just getting rid of this from last. No, Sue. This is current. They have pulled out new stuff.
I was at, is it Bed Bath & Beyond or another store that sells a lot of candles?
Probably.
Over the weekend. And it was all Halloween stuff.
That's
Halloween
nuts
music.
To me.
Yeah.
All sorts of ice cream candles and all sorts of wild stuff.
Well,
when I worked at that very store, Bed Bath & Beyond, before they went out of business, we would have the dorm stuff's already gone. It's Halloween stuff in the seasonal.
Wow, that's nuts. Okay, remember Ultra Skelly from last year, that huge giant skeleton that they had and everybody put in their yards?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Home Depot is going to be selling a new version this year, which is, I'm sorry, the original one is Skelly. This is Ultra Skelly, which is an app-controlled version that allows you to, quote, oversee its animatronic elements, like moving its mouth. It can also be equipped with pre-recorded dialogue. Fred,
holy
I want
cow.
You to have one of these.
Oh, yeah.
And you should say, I just want Fred recorded Ultra Skelly. You can have a business recording stuff for people. It can also be equipped with recordings by yourself if you want it, or the pre-recorded. They can be up to 30 seconds long. But this one, this Skelly, the Ultra Skelly, is only 6.5 feet tall. Now, part of my walk, I walk by a house that never took theirs down.
Yes.
The giant
yes.
one. Do you see these? And they decorated it for Christmas. They decorated it for baseball season.
Oh, my gosh.
And they'll just rip everything off for
insane.
The actual Halloween, I think. And they'll do it for that as well. But, I mean, the thing's huge, Fred. You're not going to want to take it down, right?
No, you're right.
But, listen, if somebody buys an Ultra Skelly, will someone call in here and get Fred to record something? I think that would be beyond
awesome.
That's a
great idea. Great idea.
What are you going to say, Fred? Like, eek? What's your thing?
Eek.
Spooky?
I don't know. How about brought to you by Sue?
That's good.
Okay. And finally, in Sue's news, we have today's random fact. The American flag Neil Armstrong planted on the moon in 1969 was knocked over by the engine blast as soon as they lifted off to leave. So five more U.S. flags have been planted on the moon since then, and NASA believes all of them are still standing. But the problem is they are now completely white. They've been just bleached by the sun.
Oh.
So we have multiple flags up there, but they're all bleached white.
Seems like a pretty disrespectful way to treat the flag.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
And that's it for Sue's News.
Thank you, Sue. When we come back, we talk with Michael Boyd here on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back, Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. By the way, we are just 26 minutes away from the trade deadline in Major League Baseball. Scott Warman will be here at 5:04 to wrap up the deadline deals and talk about this last stretch of the season for the Cardinals. But with us right now, we are joined by Michael Boyd. He is an aviation analyst and president of the Boyd Group International. Michael, welcome to the show.
Joe, thank you very much. Honored to be here.
You know, I love flying. I started the show by saying this. I love flying. I love vacations. And if I'm on a plane, that most likely means I'm on my way to vacation. But I have noticed turbulence more common than maybe 10 years ago. And we saw this issue actually ground, you know, make a plane land early in Minneapolis. What can you tell us about turbulence in 2025?
Well, you know, we don't have good statistics going back 10 years now. People babbling about it might be global warming or it might be who knows what. That doesn't make any difference. We have it. You know, 26 people, you know, going to the hospital. You know, in this day and age, whatever it is, when you're sitting in an airplane, you better have your seatbelt fastened. The days of having stand-up bars and things like that, you don't want to do that. If you have to go to the restroom, go and get back quick. But right now today, it's just not advisable to be wandering around the cabin of an airplane flying through the sky. That's all there is to it.
There's, you know, you look at, let's just look at the country instead of the world. Look at United States of America. Are there parts of the country where it's always going to be turbulent regardless of what the system is? Or is this all reliant on, you know, weather patterns?
Well, it's weather patterns, but it's also, you know, mountain waves. And you fly over the Rocky Mountains, there have been airplanes, you know, that historically have literally lost engines. I mean, off of the airplane. It's been so, the weather's been so bad. Look, back in the 60s, a big Boeing 707 took off from Tokyo, flew over Mount, whatever it was, Fujiyama, and it got torn to pieces in the sky. So we're dealing with nature. Nature always isn't like we like it to be. So the bottom line is you get on the airplane, they say, fasten the seatbelt, fasten it low and tight.
You know, Michael, I've always heard that, you know, turbulence for a pilot is like hitting a pothole as a driver. Is that still the case?
Oh, sure. You know, and pilots, you know, try to handle the airplane through that, but it's very difficult to do when you don't know what this wind aberration really is doing. But, you know, keep in mind, the pilots are the best we've got in the world here in the United States, but nobody can really deal with this. So what we're saying about here, again, those 26 people, I'm sorry about that. And it could have been a lot of those were crew members. But the bottom line of it is it's just not a good idea when you get on an airplane, go through the sky, sit down and shut up.
Now, this might sound like a ridiculous question, but I'm asking this purely as someone who loves to, you know, go sit down, put my headphones in and zone out on an airplane. Is there any way that planes could be made to handle turbulence to the point where it's not as jarring in the cabin?
Well, that's kind of what they said about the Titanic. Can we make a boat that won't sink? It's about the same thing.
All right. I was just wondering. So you think, you know, let's look, it's 2025, 2030, 2035. I mean, do you think it's possible that turbulence gets worse or this, what we're seeing today, is the new normal?
Well, I would suspect today is a new normal only because we know it's there. You know, whether it'll get worse or whether it is worse, I can't pass on that. But we do know it's there. That's all we really need to know. I don't know if it's going to get any worse or any better, but the fact is it can happen. So, again, airplane cabins are not for wandering around. They're not for going to the lounge. They're not for standing up at stand-up bars going across the Atlantic.
Now, this, again, might sound ridiculous to an expert like you. I am not an expert. You know, we see planes, I mean, more and more people getting crammed on these airplanes. Does that play into this at all?
No, not really. I mean, you know, but you get about, and keep in mind, the average airplane seat width in America actually has gone up in the last 30 years, not less. But the fact of the matter is, you do have a lot of people in there. Leg room is, you know, if you're a paraplegic, you're fine. But I mean, leg room is really bad. But the fact of it, in many cases, but the fact is, the number of people on the airplane is de minimis in terms of what turbulence will do to the airplane.
Now, you know, Michael, this is going on, but we're also seeing some leniency at TSA checkpoints. You know, last time I went to fly, I didn't have to untie my shoes. Is that the right direction for safety of the skies, again, in 2025?
It is, because most of what's been done, well, at the TSA since it was founded, is eyewash. Taking off your shoes has not done anything, because you're putting it in a bin, you're not going to find explosives in that generally now. Things like that, or the water bottles. We've been reacting to what happened. I'm hoping this NOM is going to do something about it, because it's not the screening process at the airport where the threat is, and that's not where 9/11 came from. It was the back door to the airports, and I don't think our airports anywhere have really strong security programs to avoid people from getting through.
So the issue is not the TSA checkpoints that we all see. It's what we're not seeing that's the big problem?
Absolutely. It's everybody working in an airport should be security trained or not. And we need to have programs in place that can anticipate what a terrorist might do to the HVAC system, or what a terrorist might do to the plumbing system, or terrorist might do to the air cargo system. We don't have any of that going on right now, and we need to put it in a place, and airports have to get more involved rather than just following whatever the TSA says.
You know, Michael, a few weeks ago, we heard of a plane that had to drop quickly because of another plane that was not called in. They had no idea was in the sky. What is the reason for stuff like that? We heard it happen a few days later in over Las Vegas. How does something like that happen in a high technology era that we're living in?
Well, the point is, in the last 20 years, our air traffic control system has, you know, just fallen way behind because it's been ignored. Unfortunately, they've been hiring air traffic controllers based upon things other than the ability, and that doesn't mean the people behind those screens are all, you know, wrong people to be there, but it's not been a focus of safety, and we could have done that. There's been systems. We testified to Congress 30 years ago on this, and nothing's been done. It's one of those things that's out of sight, out of mind. It's like security. Hey, we haven't had a 9/11 event in, well, 25 years, so we must be doing it right. That doesn't work that way.
You know, but we're talking to people. I mean, I'm sure there's people in this audience that will be on a plane tomorrow, be on the plane this weekend. I mean, should they feel safe that even with those issues in traffic control, that the pilots of your commercial airlines are prepared to deal with something like that as the pilots were in these two instances?
And the last 20 before that, they were ready. So, yeah, pilots in America, we talk about, you know, the miracle on the Hudson where a guy put an airplane on the Hudson and nobody barely got wet. We have 30,000 or 40,000 pilots in the United States of America, more than that, 100,000 pilots in the U.S. air transportation system that could have done exactly the same thing. It's that well qualified.
And then you have the issue over in Washington, D.C., and we're hearing these hearings are happening where you had the Army helicopter and an airplane. Again, is this something that people should be fearing when they get into an airplane?
Not now, because of the event, they're going to change things. And that's the problem we have. We don't change things until someone dies. But you shouldn't have had helicopters that close to an approach, number one. Number two, now they're saying, well, the altimeters might have been different. Well, that's not good enough. But I think going forward, that's what we have when we have calamities like this. We learn from them, and we can avoid that one happening again.
Now, Michael, I am sorry. I'm just going to let the audience know this. I did not give Michael an idea that I was going to ask this question. So, Michael, if it's off the radar, just let me know. But 16 years ago, we had 3407 in my backyard. You know, and I know it's beautiful summer day now, but winter is coming. Are airplanes in America safe in the winter? Do we have the right precautions against ice and things like that?
We do. The problem is we have things like pilot errors. As long as we insist upon putting humans to build airplanes and fly them, there's going to be mistakes made. But, you know, we learn from that. The problem is with one of those events, you know, they put in things that don't make any sense, like a 1,500-hour rule for pilots to be trained. There is no curriculum in that. They could be sitting in front of a TV set for all we know. So we should have Congress out of it. But, you know, training pilots, for example, is an issue of skills, not necessarily hours. But, boy, if you dare say you have a problem with a 1,500-hour rule, you're going to get strung up.
So that was my, Michael, that was my very next question. This 1,500 rule, you know, that's, I'm broadcasting in Buffalo, and that is a big issue is, you know, no one wants to see this tinkered with. You're saying that it's all for show. It's not as important as people are playing it up?
No, it isn't. But if that had been enforced 10 years before that event in Buffalo, it wouldn't have solved that crash. It wouldn't have avoided that crash. It would have nothing to do with the people in the cockpit. Those mistakes that were made there. So the 1,500-hour rule is a giant placebo, but it's a sacred placebo that our new FAA administrator, who is a highly qualified person, dared question whether that's enough training or the right kind of training, and you got people in Congress that basically wanted to take him out and shoot him.
Michael Boyd, great stuff, man. Really appreciate the conversation.
My pleasure, sir. You have a good day.
Thanks, you too. That is Michael Boyd. He is an aviation analyst and president of the Boyd Group International. And let me tell you guys, after talking to him, I feel very comfortable getting on an airplane. I'll be on one in about a month to see my beloved Hokies in Atlanta. And that's the kind of reassuring talk that I think more people need is what Michael Boyd, he knows it. He knows his stuff. He knows aviation and just a calm, you know, a calm message, a calming tone. Everything is fine. We have the skilled pilots. I'm going to take this interview and put it on my phone so I can listen to it as the plane's taking off, because that's the assurance I think we need, not the scare tactics that we get way too often out of D.C. Thanks again, Michael. Really, really appreciate it. When we come back, we will talk more MLB trade deadline. 15 minutes until the deadline. And don't forget, at 5:04, Scott Warman from FanDuel Sports Midwest will join us to break down not only the deadline deals and what that means for your St. Louis Cardinals, but what we should expect from these last 2 months of the 2025 MLB season. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk on this Thursday. Hope everyone...
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.
Is enjoying their day. Maybe it's the end of the workday for you and your heading home, whatever it is you are doing. We're happy to have you here. Like I said, we're going to be talking about the deadline at right after the 5 o'clock news here. The Cardinals so far have made, I believe, and Ethan can correct me, just two moves. And they were one yesterday and one earlier today, right? Ethan, am I correct on that?
They made two moves yesterday.
Both yesterday.
Yeah. They traded Ryan Helsley and Steven Matz. Still waiting. Still wouldn't surprise me. We have about 9 minutes here remaining until the trade deadline. It would not surprise me if the Cardinals still end up moving on from Phil Maton. In fact, I'd be really surprised if they don't. So, there's still trades going on. I mean, just 45 seconds ago, a new trade being released out by all the writers. So, it goes down to the wire. And sometimes even after the deadline, because some of these trades, they get processed, but the information doesn't get released to the public until a few minutes after. So keep your eyes peeled if you're, a baseball fan, Cardinals fan, because you never know what could happen here in these next few minutes.
That's right. That's right. All eyes on the deadline. And like I said, after the top of the hour news, we'll be talking about it. You know, speaking of sports, I've got to say this. We've got just a few minutes here. You know what really bothers me is everyone saying, quote, football is back. No, it's not. No, it's not. Preseason football, I think, is the biggest tease of the year. Like everyone, you've got all these people. Oh, football's back tonight. The Hall of Fame game. really? What? The starters get two snaps?
If that.
Yeah. I mean, most teams aren't even going to play their starters in this Hall of Fame game. I hate it. I hate the preseason. I wish it would go down to just one game because every time I see Josh Allen take the field, it's one slip up away from the season being over.
You know, it's interesting. The Hall of Fame game, I feel like I've never heard really anything good about the Hall of Fame game. I know that they've done some renovations in Canton, but people used to talk terribly about that facility. But yeah, I agree. What I'm curious of is with the preseason getting shorter and seeming like it's going to continue to get shorter, will it emphasize those preseason games anymore now because there's not as much time for your guys to get ready? You know, these last couple of years, Joe, I don't know if you've seen this necessarily in the Bills, but the quarterback play in week one and even week two has been not good the first couple weeks of the year. And I'm wondering if that's because these guys don't have enough time to really get into the rhythm, get into the routine of being back at full speed play for four quarters. So I wonder if teams will adjust or if they'll just kind of bite that bullet and live with that, knowing that you don't want to deal with any injuries in the preseason.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And obviously, yeah, not overly a bad issue since 21 with Josh Allen. But yeah, I'm all for, Ethan, a one actual game preseason game. And why don't you put it on the clubs to have a scrimmage? You know, bring other clubs in. The Bills did this with the Steelers a few years ago. Bring clubs into camp, have it in that kind of atmosphere so you can get the reps in against people who aren't your teammates. But also, you know, I think you play a 15-minute quarter, a 15-minute scrimmage against another team instead of just the game where the pads are going full and you've got, you know, some teams are playing their starters, other teams are playing the guy that's just hoping to get on, especially in that third preseason game. It makes for a mess, man. It makes for a mess.
We have some breaking news here on 97.1. Some breaking sports news on 97.1. The St. Louis Cardinals have traded relief pitcher Phil Maton to the Texas Rangers. They're receiving two minor league prospects in return. That is according to Katie Wu. So another move being made right here at the deadline, just minutes away. So we'll get more information, I'm sure, from Scott Warman at the top of the 5 o'clock hour here in just a few minutes on some of these prospects.
And credit to Ethan, because a minute ago he said that Maton was going to get traded. We're back after this.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.